You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Regular listeners, Zoomers will know that over the past lengthy amount of time, I think, we've talked about the issues surrounding Lyme disease. Lyme disease has also come to the attention of Elizabeth May, who's the leader of the Green Party in Canada, and she joins us on the line now. Elizabeth, welcome back to Zoomer Radio.
Thanks so much, Dale.
I note with some great interest that you have a private member's bill now introduced, and I'd like you just to tell us a bit about why you've done this.
Okay, well, my private member's bill is to mandate the Minister of Health federally to convene a meeting with federal, provincial, territorial, and medical experts and concerned groups to develop a national Lyme disease strategy. I've been, as you have been, concerned about Lyme disease for quite a while. My first realization of how serious it could be was when I was living in Nova Scotia. A friend of mine in New Glasgow was in her wheelchair and had the, and I'm sure this is familiar to you, the saga of being misdiagnosed, being told she had multiple sclerosis. This was some years ago that they were still saying, the governor of Nova Scotia would say to her point blank, you don't have Lyme disease because we don't have Lyme disease in Nova Scotia.
I mean, the same dumbass answer from certain doctors here in Ontario as well. No, there's no Lyme disease in Ontario. That's nonsense. Of course
there is. And we have Lyme disease now spreading rather rapidly. Certainly Nova Scotia now acknowledges it has Lyme disease.
Yeah.
And New Brunswick, southern Ontario and southeastern Ontario, British Columbia, southern Vancouver Island where I live, we have a lot of Lyme disease. And people started coming through my door of my office, and I, even before I got elected, I was thinking to myself, I'm going to get one shot at a private member's bill that gets put to a vote.
Yeah.
And what's the thing I could do that's most likely to pass, where I could get, you know, you need conservatives on board on a private member's bill to pass it.
Sure.
And what's the thing I could do that would make the biggest difference in my first term and the most ignored issue? And it didn't take long for me to realize if I could do something on Lyme disease. I mean, obviously people are going to say, gee, we figured in the Green Party you'd be pushing for action on climate change or you'd want to get proportional representation. But I'm thinking, what can I do that could get passed?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do that's going to make an immediate difference? And so I started right away, even before getting elected, I knew it was going to be trying to work on Lyme disease. And so it's, I just, you know, I'm hopeful because I already have had conversations with conservative members of parliament, liberals, Democrats. And there's a lot, yes, you can imagine. If you're a member of parliament, you have people coming through the door of your office, and if they're saying, I'm going to the U.S. for treatment, I can't get reimbursed by my provincial health plan, I can't get a doctor to diagnose, or my daughter's in a wheelchair, she should be in grade 12 with her friends, but she's home in a wheelchair. I mean, these stories just break your heart, and you know that at this point, there isn't a proper response from authorities.
No, there certainly isn't, based on the fact that the people in the treatment end of things, a lot of doctors, right to this day, and I'm using now Ontario as an example, are downplaying anybody ever get. Oh no, it's probably not that, or the unreliable nature of the testing, false positive, false negative.
Exactly. And they're laboring under the misapprehension that this is a rare condition.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that I do know from my work on climate change and global warming is that the the scientists have been saying this now for 20 years, that one of the things we would see due to global warming would be an increase of what they call vector-borne diseases. And Lyme disease was one of those. I mean, identified decades ago that Canada would be seeing more because we are seeing a change in climatic conditions. And one of the things that happens is the range of the ticks that carry Lyme disease is spreading. And so it's not rare the way it used to be, but our ability to handle it appears to be rare. We have some wonderful doctors who are very good at understanding the diagnostic procedures, who are aware that, okay, you send the test to the lab, it comes back negative. Probably doesn't mean that you can rule out Lyme if everything else tells you it's Lyme disease.
Yeah.
It's not straightforward to diagnose, so I'm sympathetic to the medical profession. But we don't have anything like the awareness in the general public. I mean, this is the summer months are upon us. How many Canadians, when they pack up to go to a campsite or hiking, are thinking, I better make sure that I reduce my exposure to ticks. I better make sure that when I get back to my campsite, I really get my closest friend to examine every inch of me to see if I've got a tick. I mean, they're very small, and you can miss them. And knowing what to do to prevent exposure to tick bites is critical.
Oh, I think an awful lot of people out there wouldn't be able to describe what a tick was.
Exactly.
Let alone know anything about something called Lyme disease, named after a place in Connecticut. They wouldn't know that.
That's
you know?
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons the state of Connecticut is one of the first places that really has addressed the issue. But I mean, knowing what to do, knowing that you should, in terms of how you remove. I mean, by the way, for listeners, and I'm sure Zoomers listening to you have already heard this, but the best place to get some practical information, I think, is the website of the Canadian Lyme Foundation.
Yeah, I would agree.
And that's at CanLyme, L-Y-M-E, CanLyme.com. And they have good graphic illustrations of how to remove it.
way too graphic, I would say, in some cases, yes.
Oh, yeah, it does give you some help in figuring out, as a practical matter, how to enjoy being outdoors. But have some Lyme, have some tick awareness. But that should be a national strategy. How to help the medical profession. If someone comes to you, I mean, the people with Lyme disease can present as though they have fibromyalgia. They can present as though they have arthritis. They can present as though they've got, who knows, maybe an asthmatic condition because shortness of breath and coughing can be a problem. You can start getting heart palpitations. The range of symptoms can be very confusing.
I got to tell you this, Elizabeth. I worked for many years with a woman who once was a research scientist, an incredibly accomplished research scientist, who was suffering from dementia. She was diagnosed with having Alzheimer's disease and was a fellow board member on the Alzheimer's Society of Canada board with me and others. And after working on behalf of that organization for many years, finally discovered that she did not have Alzheimer's disease. She had Lyme disease.
Oh, my word.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Well, mental confusion is one of the symptoms.
Well, that's right. And it was the same kind of mental confusion that had initially been diagnosed, and the diagnosis stood up for a number of years as Alzheimer's, and it wasn't.
Yeah, that's one of the things that happens, I think, in the medical profession, not to be critical, because goodness knows, this is, as this becomes more prevalent, I think doctors will have this is what I'm hoping to do through the National Lyme Disease Strategy on my private members bill, is create a sharing of best practices, a lot more information to the medical community and to the departments of health within provincial governments. So that there's some best practices that are emerging. How do we share those? How do we make sure that when someone presents with a set of symptoms that make you think, oh, I've seen this before, this is dementia, or I've seen this before, this is multiple sclerosis. Somebody has been diagnosed and incorrectly diagnosed, everything focuses on that treatment.
Yeah.
And to discover years later, you know what, as your friend did, this was Lyme disease. I mean, I'm hoping that once they correctly diagnosed her, did they get her the appropriate treatment? Is she now better?
Well, I think one of the things that potentially scares me the most about Lyme disease and its potentially lethal nature is the fact that if you catch it right away, you can take an antibiotic and you're probably done with it. It's those cases where it's not caught and this insidious bacteria takes up residence in your body and does all of these incredible, serious, terrible things to your body.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can't get it out.
I know. And one of my constituents here, and I'm they're just fantastic human being. He's he would love to be able to talk about how Lyme disease has ruined his life.
Yeah.
But the only way he could get a dispensation, the only way he could get benefits as someone who is, he's completely disabled.
Yeah.
Completely disabled. But he has to remain anonymous because the doctor at the time said, well, the only way I can get you any kind of disability benefits is diagnosing this as fibromyalgia.
Yeah.
If I say it's Lyme disease, you're not going to get any disability benefits.
It sets off alarm bells if you say Lyme disease.
Yeah, it's a very odd situation that you can, that you can, and these, and I have met so many people who are, I mean, you know, not to be alarmist about it, but if you don't catch it early, it does ruin your life. I mean, you can end up completely disabled, as in lying in your bed, in your home, unable to do even, you know, even social visits. You are completely bedridden. And that's a situation that you'd think all medical professionals and the federal government, and I'm hoping that Minister Glukak will support my bill because she has written me that they recognize at Health Canada that Lyme disease is a serious disease. They recognize its existence in Canada. They recognize that new treatments are being developed. And where's the
start.
Harm in a national Lyme disease strategy?
Well, nothing. There's no harm in it at all. We got to bring awareness to more people about it. We have doctors in Ontario here who have been criticized by other members of their own profession for treating Lyme disease.
Yes, even. I've heard about that. Actually,
there's this paranoia about it here, trying to deny its existence, and so anybody who's treating it must be doing something wrong, you know?
I know, and that part of it, I mean, doctors who are trying to help and do the right thing, the fact that they can face sanctions from their own profession is another part about this. I mean, I guess we both have to admit that at least I'm baffled by the fact that this is so difficult.
I am as well. And the other difficulty, I don't know if this has been your experience, the other difficulty here in Ontario is that, of course, if the Lyme disease becomes resident in your body, the treatment is, of course, massive amounts of antibiotics. And that's something that many, many doctors are very reticent to prescribe.
That's true. And, you know, the fact that if some, you know, even though the medical community now and the Minister of Health will recognize that Lyme disease exists, we are having problems getting the recognition that there's such a thing as chronic Lyme disease.
Yeah.
That some people are experiencing life-altering changes that persist well beyond the time that the doctors will think, okay, that can't be Lyme disease because it's doing so much damage to so many different organs.
Yeah, it must be something else. Yeah,
yeah, and that's you know, and the worst thing, of course, for Lyme disease sufferers, and I'm sure you've heard this too, is the number of doctors who say, "Well, I think it must all be in your head because I can't figure out what it is." So you know, it's bad enough.
It is to it's sad, but it is to laugh. You know.
Well, you know, there certainly are a lot of wonderful doctors out there who are trying to help.
Yeah.
And this is where, if we could get, as I say, the best practices and share them across Canada so that the medical community, the citizens, that we get better diagnosis, better treatment, all of these things should be, you know, relatively easy to do.
Well, and some of that expertise exists quite fully in the United States, where they know all about Lyme disease.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know?
So that's where, you know, I'm hoping my private member's bill on a national Lyme disease strategy will get support. And I, you know, inviting listeners who are concerned about this issue, my bill number, it's Bill C-442.
Mm-hmm.
And if over the summer you'd be willing to make sure you get in touch with your own member of parliament, whatever party stripe they are, and say, look, on private member's bills, parties across, members of parliament across party lines can support each other.
Well, yeah, this is not a partisan issue at all.
No,
this is
it
an
isn't.
Issue of good health.
And I'm hoping it won't become one, because if it stays nonpartisan, I'm really hoping for members of Parliament in the Conservative Party to support this bill. And if they hear from their constituents, that will really, really help, because the bill will be put to a vote not till early 2013. And so we have time to build the momentum and build the support. I mean, the bill won't solve everything, but I do believe that the focus on the issue and bringing together people in, you know, I don't see how anyone can be against this, a national Lyme disease strategy based on best practices.
Yeah, I'm talking to Elizabeth May, the leader of the Green Party in Canada. We're talking about her private member's bill that would be designed to create a national Lyme disease strategy. If you have a comment or a question, please give us a call at 416-360-0740 or 866-744-740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.
My guest is Elizabeth May, leader of the Green Party in Canada. Elizabeth, all our lines are full here. Can we take some calls?
Wait.
Are you there? Okay.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Here we go. Here's Marlene on her cell phone. Marlene, do you have a comment or a question for Elizabeth May?
Yes, my name is Marlene. I've had Lyme disease for 5 years, and I've been speaking to you before, Dale.
All right.
And I just wanted to thank her for what she's doing. It's high time. We've been struggling. Now it's costing me hundreds of dollars every month to pay for treatment and to go to the States for treatment for something that could have been dealt with here in Canada. I was infected in Ontario.
Yeah.
Tested positive in Ontario, was originally treated by a doctor in Ontario until he was told not to treat anymore because he was looking after a disease which doesn't exist in Canada, and I was set adrift and within 3 weeks back in ER and last summer in a wheelchair.
Oh, it's just outrageous, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And earlier this year, April, I had to leave a job because the Alzheimer's symptoms in my brain made it that I couldn't do this job anymore.
Yeah.
But I couldn't take disability because I have to work to pay for my medication.
The cognitive impairment is what you're talking about, that this disease can...
That's what I'm talking about, yes. Yeah. I do not seem to be able to get new information to stick in my brain.
Yeah.
Recipes I've been making for years just mess up.
Yeah.
If I don't use a rice cooker or a TV oven which switches off, I just don't cook anymore. Instead of doing the dinners I used to do, I'm now demoted to cheese grater and onion chopper, which is fun.
Well, that's fine as far as it goes, but it's not what you originally had planned for in your life, had you?
No.
And no, not at all.
Thank goodness for my wonderful husband, because without him, who sorts out my pills, I cannot do that anymore.
Yeah.
There would be no way I could be functioning on my own.
What do the doctors say in the U.S.? Obviously, you're getting treatment there. Will there be... will the doctor be able to get this bacteria out of your body?
We don't know. When I was also diagnosed with co-infections of Bartonella and Babesia, and she treats them one after the other. She goes after the one, then the other one starts taking over and so on.
Yeah.
And when I saw her again in April, she told me that I am not progressing as she was hoping that I would. She assumed that I had another co-infection, which at that stage she couldn't diagnose or even name and had no idea how to treat. So I do not know what I'm facing here. I truly don't.
Elizabeth, your thoughts?
Well, it's, you know, Marlene, my heart goes out to you. And what I would have wished was that when you told me this story, I would think, how extraordinary, how unusual.
Yeah.
But I've been working with Lyme disease patients now in many parts of Canada, and the stories are, you know, tragically similar. Doctors not understanding what they're facing, patients who are forced, you know, into, you know, really life-altering changes. And I think, again, I'm so pleased that you do have a partner and a husband who can help you through this and support you, you know, as you're facing the kind of, you know, really... just it turns your life upside down, and it's something that so few Canadians are aware of.
And the glaring fact that Marlene is unable to find a doctor in Canada to treat her.
Exactly, and I have so many I've heard so many stories from people who, at their own expense, go down to the States and at their own expense get the treatment, and can't even get. The prescriptions that are prescribed by a U.S. doctor, and they're buying them here in Canada, and if it was another disease, the healthcare system would be providing reimbursement for the drugs that are being purchased, but
true
not
enough.
For Lyme.
Well, Marlene, the best of luck with you and your doctor in the U.S. I hope you can make some progress there.
Thank you. And right. Thank you for doing this, both of you.
Right. Well, thank you, Marlene. Please do let anyone you know who's come, who knows what you're suffering through, tell them to please help us by contacting their member of parliament to support the bill.
Bill C-442.
Oh, yes. I've been doing that. My blog keeps telling that, and I have contacted your office and given
permission to use
my name, everything.
Oh, thank you, Marlene.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Marlene.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You. All right.
Here's Ellen on the line from Milton. Hi, Ellen.
Hello, Gold Talk. I'm interested in Lyme disease because my son had it. And he got it in the military in Kingston.
Yeah.
They were on Wolf Island. The platoon came down with it, and the doctors were right on them. They had them quarantined. They had them in special units where they were all picked off with the ticks. They got rid of them.
Yeah.
And they have such a good training program that I believe that you should have a film crew down there at Kingston because their doctors know everything about Lyme disease. They
it's nice that the armed forces is looking after its people, but out in the general public, that kind of care just isn't available, Ellen.
No, it isn't. But can't you do a film documentary on how they do the treatment for Lyme disease?
Well, that's not a bad idea.
Is it on an education channel?
Yeah, that's
I think that's great information to have. I hadn't realized that the military did have a good grip on it. That's very helpful information.
It is indeed. I didn't either. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ellen. That's an interesting point. And yet some branches of government know full well, apparently, the dangers of ticks.
Yes.
And the threat. You know, here's Elizabeth from Richmond Hill. Elizabeth, you have a question for Elizabeth May.
I don't have a question. I'm another Lyme disease sufferer, and I want to thank both of you very, very much for taking this up. Many of us have felt that we're up against a brick wall for many years, and we even feel this is the action is late in coming, but nevertheless, we're very, very grateful and are thankful to see some momentum now in the cause. And I'd like to mention that chronic fatigue syndrome is, you know, can also be a common misdiagnosis.
Yeah.
And
Were you misdiagnosed in the beginning, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You were. Yeah.
Treatment began 6 years ago when I was diagnosed with Lyme, and I had lots of antibiotics for 4 years, and then I've switched since to alternative type treatment also through a clinic in the U.S., but getting naturopathic treatment here as well, and it's financially devastating. I chose to not continue the high-dose antibiotics because my liver was not able to tolerate it any further.
Yeah.
And I know a number of patients who are having a terrible struggle financially. Some have had to sell their homes and some have remortgaged their homes in order to be able to afford treatment.
It's just terrible, isn't it?
I thank you very much.
Do you know, and so obviously you were bitten by a tick at some point and didn't realize it, or there were no early symptoms until the disease had a good chance to take hold in your body, I guess.
Correct. I was never aware of having been bitten.
Yeah.
I'd also like to mention something that's perhaps very controversial, but I think it should be said because it's not being mentioned publicly, that there are other ways that it is of getting Lyme disease. It is a communicable disease.
Well, we had a long, long debate about that with doctors here on Zoomer Radio, and they had to concede at the end of the day that that's entirely possible.
It is. They call it cousin to syphilis. So why, you know, the possibility is there. And when you speak with certain doctors in the States that have a history of treating Lyme, and particularly pediatricians, they see that it does occur.
Elizabeth, thank you. Thank you very much. The best to you. Are you progressing at all against the disease, do you feel?
I don't know that I'm progressing. I'm pretty much, I'm at fairly low function. Yeah. But I'm still around.
Yeah.
Elizabeth,
yeah.
You stay in touch with us, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye. These stories are just outrageous, are they not?
Dale, there are so many stories that have come to me. That's when I started realizing, you start thinking, well, okay, it's anecdotal. It's just a coincidence that I seem to have known so many people with Lyme disease. But when I was elected, and, you know, they're, you know, open to constituents, the numbers of people coming through my door who were saying, I can't get compensation. That was a big issue, was, can you help me try, even though it's not a federal issue, can you help me try to get the provincial health insurance to recognize the costs of what I'm going through to get treatment in the U.S.?
Yeah.
There's where I am on Southern Vancouver Island, Washington State isn't too far away. San Francisco isn't too far away. And there are quite a lot of Lyme sufferers going south of the border. And I know that the same is true, you know, heading to different parts of, going to into Connecticut, going into New England from Lyme sufferers in Ontario. This is just unnecessary. If we could just get a better level of awareness, because the other part of this, which is that this is just the beginning of a spreading disease, and we need to create more awareness because, as I said, due to climate change, we're going to see more. And that,
well, and if you add to that what the last caller was talking about, the fact that it's probably communicable from person to person, then you're developing a really frightening scenario.
Yeah,
here.
And that's something that, you know, that's the first time I have heard that, Dale, and I'm pleased that you've already had a number of medical experts on your program to look into that aspect of it, because that's going to...
makes it even worse, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
But, I mean, the point is they couldn't say precisely that it was communicable, but because the bacteria is in the bloodstream, they could not assure us that it was not communicable.
Exactly. Well, the need to get the top medical experts together with our provincial and federal health departments, with groups like the Canadian Lyme Foundation, advocacy groups for patients, because one of the other things, as you can tell from hearing Elizabeth and how very, very weak she sounded, it's easy to be your own advocate for health care and for proper benefits.
That's
when
right.
you're suffering to the extent that Lyme disease patients are suffering. So it's a really, it's an unbearable burden on the patient and on their families to have to fight a system. And as I've done a lot of work on public health issues. And, you know, in the past when I was working against Agent Orange, for instance, and you knew that you had the medical establishment in some places saying, well, there's nothing wrong with Agent Orange. And, you know, you sort of think, gosh, why? But you kind of suspect, okay, well, the people who manufacture this must have been lobbying them. There's no profit motive, no lobby group in trying to deny the existence of Lyme disease. Or the fact that it can become, chronic, or the fact that you need to have an immediate response and you don't want to run the risk of a misdiagnosis. I mean, I think change is coming, but it's all too slow when you hear stories like the ones we're hearing from your listeners today.
There are a lot of stories out there just like that, I'll tell you.
Well, you know, let's look, you know, I've tell you that one of the things that's made me very, very emotional about this bill has been that our office has been swamped with people saying, for the first time, I feel there's some hope.
Yeah.
I'm really glad to see somebody take this up. I've had other friends who said, you know, in Parliament, they said, what's your going to be your private member's bill that you put forward to a vote? And for a year, I've been saying to people, well, Lyme disease strategy. And they say, what?
What's that?
Top priority? What?
Yeah, I'm sure.
If it gives people hope, and if the medical establishment will agree that this makes sense and not lobby against it, as long as we can have members of Parliament allowed to vote their conscience on this one, we will get this National Lyme Disease Strategy.
Well, I hope so. It's Bill C-442, right?
Yeah, if people go to my website, elizabethmay.mp, not a political website, it's just my MP website.
Yeah.
The text of the bill is there. You can link to more information. You can link to the Canada Lyme Foundation website. And I'm really hopeful that we will get, over the course of summer, what they call the famous barbecue circuit.
Yeah.
Find your member of parliament, and tell them you really want this bill to pass.
Now, the strategy is a good thing to have the whole country thinking about this and raising awareness, but somewhere in there, there has to be some money for better diagnosing and better treatment, too,
yes.
Does there not?
Well, that's right. My because it's a private member's bill...
I know, it can't have money attached, I know.
But
I know.
It does create an enabling section that the Minister of Finance will have the authority to put forward the monies that may be needed federally and provincially to implement the strategy once we've developed it.
Elizabeth May, thanks very much for telling us all about this bill.
Well, thank you, Dale. It's a great program. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later now. Bye-bye. Bill C-442 that would establish a national Lyme disease strategy in Canada.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.